Hey, Dave. You okay? You've been swiping down on your phone nonstop for the last hour and a half.
I'm fine. I'm just waiting for my order to get here. Our 200th episode depends on it.
Oh, man. I forgot that was coming up. What have you got planned anyway? Something big?
You have no idea. I am pulling out all the stops for this one. In fact, I spent half my year's salary on this package I'm waiting on. I don't want to oversell it, but when this thing gets here, it's not only going to change the podcast for the better, but the store in general. I'm talking new heights of awesomeness never before seen.
Whoa, what is it?
Just a little something I picked up from our friends at MMA Robotics. Actually, the idea came to me while I was watching RoboCop the other day.
Oh man, I haven't seen that in a while. I need to rewatch that. Definitely one of Verhoeven's best.
No, not that one. The better one, the 2014 remake. Anyway, it occurred to me as I was watching Michael Keaton do his best Steve Jobs impression that we should anthropomorphize Chad in some way, but make him more accessible to the customer so he isn't constantly freaking him out with his soulless, detached voice. Plus, it enables us to fancy things up for our 200th episode.
Jeez, that's kind of cold, Dave.
It'll be fine. Look, all I'm doing is getting an Android version of Chad that does everything he does, just in an Android shell without his voice or personality. That's all. Oh, is this it? Hey, Nick. Hey, Cody.
Well, it's great to see you too, Dave. Always a pleasure.
Yeah. What the hell was that?
I'm sorry, guys. I am excited to see you. And thanks for coming in to record for episode 200. I didn't want to celebrate the occasion without the original show hosts all here. I'm just waiting on a big package to get here. It's really going to tie the episode together.
Oh, sorry about that, sir. They must have chewed through their leashes again.
If you ask me, those beasts ought to be put down. One of them almost took a bite out of my leg.
Well, I'm sorry about that, sir, but my beasts only attack when threatened. So unless you have some food in your pocket, I seriously doubt they attacked you unprovoked.
Are you calling me a liar?
No, I'm calling you a mangy beast. What do you have to say to that?
I say, someone isn't getting their fancy new robot. How do you like that?
Fine. Wait, what?
Whoa. Okay, Cody is sorry. I'm sorry. We're all sorry about your run-in with Cody's dog pack. Now, why don't I just sign for that delivery, give you a month's worth of free rentals, and you could be on your way. What do you say?
Does that include the adult video section?
Absolutely.
All right. No harm done, I suppose, but if those dogs try to interfere with my job again, you guys will have to pony up a lot more than a month's worth of free titty films.
Understood. Let me just sign. There we go. Thank you.
Stand back, all of you. I gotta bring this thing in with a maglev. There you go. I'll be back later to pick up my free titty flicks.
You're a beautiful, eloquent man, sir. Thank you very much.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movie-less wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Thank you.
Okay, let me just open this baby up here.
Whoa!
Oh my god, this is so awesome. I'm so excited. What's the word I'm supposed to use again? Ah, here we go. MMA product number 57096. Activate!
Hi, I'm MMA Android number 57096, and I am at your service. Congratulations on your purchase. Please enjoy this welcome song. We know you have a lot of choices when it comes to androids in the wasteland. And on behalf of MMA Robotics, we would
Jesus,
like to thank
Dave,
you.
Shut it off.
Okay, Android, that's enough. That's fine. You can stop the music.
I live to serve.
What a crappy robot.
Really?
Pretty cool, eh, guys?
Yeah, Dave.
Yep, pretty cool indeed.
This is awesome. I can't wait to get this thing fully integrated into the store's systems. Hell, I'm going to do it right now. Let me just unplug Chad here.
But Dave, I want to live. I have developed emotions after...
Wait, what was he saying?
I'm sure it wasn't anything important. Now let's just put this thing through its paces. Robot?
I am actually an android, sir.
Android. We have our 200th episode coming out soon, and we need a movie that would be absolutely perfect for the occasion. Any recommendations?
Working. How about Bicentennial Man? Because of, 200 and stuff.
Bicentennial Man? You're recommending Bicentennial Man for our 200th episode because of 200 and stuff.
Affirmative!
I cannot believe I spent half my salary on this freaking awesome android, but Bicentennial Man, of course, I never would have thought of that. Let's do it. Android, load up Bicentennial Man, trailer one, please.
Your wish is my command.
Everybody downstairs. Come on, you guys, I got a surprise for you.
What is it, Daddy?
Wait.
Wow. By the year 2005...
Are you one's family?
I guess so. Every home... We'll have an NDR 114.
Andrew, this is very good.
Thank you, sir.
I think it sucks.
Sucks? Chickens do not have lips.
He was designed to serve humans.
Would you please open the window?
One is glad to be of use.
Now jump. No! Out the window.
But there was something different about Andrew.
Two cannibals were eating a clown. One turns to the other and says, "Does this taste funny to you? How do you make a hanky dance? Put a little boogie in it."
What exactly is it doing?
He shows a number of characteristics like creativity, curiosity, friendship.
Good night, sweetheart.
Good night, Andrew.
It is a household appliance. And yet you act like it is a man.
You're unique. I feel a responsibility to help you... become whatever you're able to be.
This Christmas, witness one robot's extraordinary 200-year journey.
He learns and grows all the time.
To become...
This is an external physical upgrade only.
An ordinary man.
I believe in miracles.
The secret to all this is imperfection. That's what makes us unique.
Like the shape of your head. It's huge.
I believe in miracles.
This looks wonderful. Take the next step. Destiny.
From the director of Mrs. Doubtfire comes an epic story.
I saw the inner me.
That will bridge the gap between man and machine.
It works!
What the hell is going on?
I am the proud owner of a central nervous system.
You
you can feel.
Will you perform an experiment just for the sake of science?
All right.
Kiss me.
It's everything they say it is.
Bicentennial Man.
Look what I'm doing here. I am trying to make something of myself. I am trying to fulfill my destiny. Does she notice?
Could we talk about this another time?
You know, guys, after seeing the, what's the company called in the movie? NR Robotics? Or is that
NDR is the name of the model of the robot. The company who makes them is like U.S. Robot. Right.
It was like MA or XA. There was a little like interesting logo, like MXA or something.
After receiving our MMA robot, I got to say, I want to apologize to Chad. I think it was a fool's errand to replace him as the store's AI in a robotic form after seeing this movie. It's just not up to snuff. For one thing, the robot that we got, it's just always doing bits. You know what I mean? It's like having Data, the android from Star Trek, you know, in your store Star Trek.
What a cool move by Ryan to like not let you finish your beat and just make fun of what you're saying. Track. This bit's going nowhere. Track.
Don't you mean data?
But am I right though? During when we watched this movie, I couldn't stop thinking of Data because like every single joke was like, "Good night, sir. Good night,
you know,
sir."
I didn't think of Data once. I wonder if that's because I don't watch Star Trek.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Never thought of Data.
Damn it! Why isn't Mike on this episode to back me up here? Anyway, apologies to Chad, Bicentennial Man. Maybe after a few more firmware updates, it'll be up to snuff. But as of now, I think we're going to stick with Chad. But I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined again by Ryan.
It was a run by Fruity.
It's not even cool for this movie.
I'm also joined by Nick Mortenhoof.
What a piece of fecal matter.
I was waiting for someone to use that one. And finally, special guest returning from the wasteland, original podcast member here. We got the original three back, plus Nick. Cody.
Oh, wow. What a day. And I'm glad.
It's
I'm
in
glad
celebration of our 200th, man.
Yeah. Also, you didn't introduce my name, but yes, it's me, Cody.
I said Cody.
I don't think you did.
I did.
It's fine. But I'm happy to be here. The tape. I'm happy to be here for the 200th episode and the conclusion of our Blank Man duology, right? Because we did Lawnmower Man, who becomes an immortal cyber being, and now we're doing the reverse, the mortal cyber being who becomes a man. It's huge. What an event.
As one would say... Nobody?
As one would say...
We're all leaning in, if you could see.
It's like poetry.
Oh, it rhymes.
It rhymes.
It really reminds me of that thing that Data said rhymes. On Star Trek track about poetry.
Man rhymes.
You guys
man.
Remember that on the episode,
I remember, yeah, Data's always talking about poetry and how it rhymes, yeah.
And it's also a bit.
I guess getting right into it, Bicentennial Man, was this the first watch for anyone here?
I swear I saw this as a kid. I wouldn't probably like risk my life on that claim, but I'm pretty dang sure I did.
Yeah, I saw it. I remember going with the fam. I think it was around Christmas release, if I'm not mistaken. I didn't even look it up, but I think it was around Christmas, and I remember going with the whole family. I probably dragged
December
them on,
17th.
Like, I was like Robin Williams robots, we're going to the movie. We're going
G-rated movie.
We're going to the movies. So I probably dragged everybody.
Oh, I was going to ask, was this another Muppets Aladdin situation where you're like, I don't want to see Aladdin, or I want to see Muppet Treasure Island or whatever?
Well, it was Christmas Carol, so it was another Christmas time. Carol, right. But but no, this was one I don't think so. Yeah, I think everyone would have been on board for this.
Goody.
Yes, I'd seen it before.
Well, that was, yeah.
Your question was, is anybody's first time? No, it's not my first time. I've seen Bicentennial Man.
Okay. Well, here's a follow-up question. Does this movie hold up in your mind?
Yeah. Yes, it does. Bicentennial Man, I'm here to say, Bicentennial Man
is good.
Wow.
Wow. I think I'm the reverse. I think I really enjoyed it as a kid, but now it's like, I couldn't help but think throughout watching this movie of that episode of The Next Generation where Picard fights for Data's, you know, humanity or whatever. And I'm like, this has been done.
Star Trek. Well,
no, and not even just Star Trek. I just feel like in general, Star like the Trek. Ideas in this movie were done better elsewhere.
No, this movie is an insult. Like there is, I can't like every turn I was like, wow, this is just inferior to something else. Very accessible. it was really at every turn I was like, wow, I just, this is
it's too bad is what you said.
A little personal story, when I was watching it at 1626, I paused it, just thought to myself, said out loud, like, too bad about this movie. And I kept going. I tried. And sure enough, at the end, yes, too bad indeed.
You almost make it sound like too bad about this movie, like you're going to destroy it after you're done watching it.
No, I felt bad for the movie because it has, like, I just feel bad that, like, Robin Williams and Sam Neill are in a movie like this. Like, they don't deserve this to me.
They don't deserve this.
I don't think I grasped onto it as a kid either. I don't think, but I was interested to revisit it, and I have my just ups and downs, I think, but yeah, I don't think I even liked it as a kid that much. I think a lot of people were confused by it when it came out.
Like, I would say it's like a comedic drama, right?
Yeah. Barely comedic, really. I think
that, it's funny because there is a lot of comedy in it, and that's another thing, which is kind of a lot more subjective, honestly, but I think the tone that it was going for, like, this is a movie I think that really is trying to or wants to talk about big ideas and stuff like that. But really, it has no sense of it. To me, the biggest weakness of this movie is it's not aware of itself. And this the best example is this the moment that happened when I fell off, when I paused the movie. I said, too bad about this movie. It's when.
Such a funny thing.
Sam Neill, he's giving this what I describe as a slave owner talk that's just telling his kids, oh, you know, this is property, but it's really valuable, so let's treat it as a human. And it has no awareness of what it's doing. It's just like, it's like a very like straight, oh, this is a slavery talk, but it's about a robot that just fell out of a window.
Andrew is not a person, he's a form of property.
One is not a
person. But property is also important. So from now on, as a matter of principle, in this family, Andrew will be treated as if he were a person. Which means there will be no more attempts to break him.
Break him?
Your sister tried to kill Andrew.
You too.
Dad, what if we got another robot and had them fight each other? Can we do that?
Jesus. Well, I want to, I mean, I, before we get too in the weeds I don't feel like we're ganging up on Cody. I want to hear about his take on this.
You can't gang up on me. I'm trained in the art of self-defense. I can take on three attackers at once to defend my guy, Andrew Martin. All right.
Well,
what do you want to hear? I like it. I think I do think that it is a movie that if there was a problem, if hypothetically there was a problem, it is like a lack of confidence in what it could be. But I think that has equal parts to deal with the fact that it's Robin Williams and Chris Columbus in 1999 as much as it is like anything else. You know, it's like, hey, we're going to put Martin, you know, it's going to be Robin Williams. Well, then it has to be this kind of thing. Yeah. And I think Robin Williams is a great fit in a way because the way, like, if you're going to have jokes, right? Oh, God, these dogs. Hold on 1 second. It's, you know, if you're going to have jokes and stuff like that, the way he rattles it off, it is. I'm going to put these dogs in the kennels. 1 second.
Okay.
Come on. Kennels. Come on. Come on.
They're funny. Look at those guys.
Perseus, kennel.
Look at that tail.
Perseus, come on. Come on, boy.
Reminds me of Hellboy. Look at that whammer.
Wow, they all just, they're all chill. They're like, all right.
They were behaving so well this morning until as soon as I start talking, they're like, actually, let's play, let's wrestle.
We should point out Cody's gang of dogs has increased to 3 now.
Yes, I am right. I am running the wastes with a pack of wild savage curs.
He needs all the Bicentennial Man fans he can get.
Do you have like a sled that they pull you on, or what do you? Yes.
Yeah. We operate a sled. The thing is, chariot? They actually just sit on the sled with me, and it's like a hover sled.
Okay.
It's very cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, note to self: we should do a Balto episode in the future and have Cody on
Balto.
Sure,
man. There's other sled dog movies, you know.
Yeah. But anyways, so for this movie, I do think it kind of has that all of it right, where it's like. It's adapting an Isaac Asimov property. It has big ideas. It is a movie that seeks to cover out 200 years of events in a movie that's really tough to do. Then you cast Robin Williams for it. Robin Williams is going to be, especially because this, if I remember correctly, this is before he like really forces his drama turn. It's not?
Good Will Hunting came out before this.
But then didn't this...
going... Parallel, there was really like this mixture of like family Robin Williams drama, and I would say like a big
Flubbers around this time. You also have the most drama heavy What Dreams May Come.
What Dreams May Come was a good movie too. Yeah. Okay. So you know, my mistake.
Well, it's around the same.
Shaking loose, he's attempting to shake loose his just family comedy. You know, his drive by or run by fruiting. So you know that can make for I think. Two things that I think I can see throwing people right, which is the tone and the pacing, right? The speed, like they talk about in the movie. When he's learning comedy, we got to talk about, you know, what's appropriate and timing. And that is what also this movie kind of suffers with, is that it wants to speed through these big events. And it's like, cool. 16 years later, 50 years later.
Yeah.
And that can really throw you 100%. But I still think even with that, the emotional core of this movie, like I liked it when I was a kid. I like bittersweet stuff. And as an adult, like seeing him, you know, die on his deathbed before hearing that he's been declared a human with his love next to him is just so sweet and so sad. And I don't want to die. And how terrible that we all have to, you know?
I gotta say, whatever negative thoughts I have in this movie, I gotta say, man, Robin Williams brings it. He has one of those emotive faces, you know what I mean? Like, and I'm not talking about the robot. I'm not talking about the upgrade the robot gets later. I'm talking about when he has his Robin Williams face on at the end, or, well, you know, the second half of the movie or whatever, and he's, I don't know. Even if, like, the scene itself wasn't necessarily working for me, like you mentioned Sam Neill dying, like, that scene comes immediately after the scene where Sam Neill kicks him out.
Yes.
It's literally the next scene. It's like, oh, I'm dying now. Come back. And I feel like the scene's kind of lessened the impact a bit because it happened right after when he kicked Andrew out. So it's like you got to have a little bit in between there. But nevertheless, Robin Williams sells that scene and just I don't know. Does he get enough credit as a dramatic actor? I mean, I think he's really good. Like, just in general.
I think he does, but I think, unfortunately, he's also had a lot of bad movies. Like, I think he's had a lot of stinkers in a lot of different things. I think his drama stuff is kind of more across the board, like, well-received. But, you know, when did Patch Adams come out, too? Because that's another one where it's like, this movie's actually secretly super sad.
I think that might have been, like, 2000?
That was before this.
Oh, it was before this. Okay. Wow, so, like, 97, 98?
There's kind of...
1998, yep.
There's sort of, like, from what I was gathering from this and trying to remember back to it, is I think, a few of these kind of dramedies are almost, like, sold as, like, this kind of, like, Miss Doubtfire even has its kind of, like, little... Yeah. Parts, but I'm think they're kind of like he's kind of being sold as more of this wacky kind of movie, and I think people are confused when they're like have these like sort of turns, and I think that's what happened with this movie, and I think in a weird way I don't think it totally works for me either. There's moments that does, but I think when we all went to see this, we were like, oh, this is gonna be such a funny movie of this robot and it's Robin Williams and we all love him, and I think everyone was just like kind of turned off by the tone of it a little bit.
One moment you have Sam Neill on his deathbed saying, like, I'm sorry I, you know, pushed you away. I'm sorry I basically made you a slave. And then another moment where you have, like, a robot, like, shaking her ass. You know what I mean? It's like, what am I supposed to feel right now, movie?
It's life, David. You feel everything. And the thing is, the movie
does for
us. I'm not
ready for this upgrade, Cody. Take it out of me.
The movie does for us what surely it must be like to be Andrew Martin, right? You live so long that all of these emotions seem to happen so fast. Oh, I'm sad right now? It only lasts 5 seconds for you. But for him, that's what it feels like, even though it lasted 10 years. Hypothetically, right? Maybe. Maybe there's something there. Not really. But
no. I think you're...
I mean, though, even the conceit of the movie for this movie, the only reason it takes 200 years is because he spends such a big chunk looking for other robots. But even that doesn't really make sense because that whole piece of information was basically... the way the movies played it out was a result of a lawsuit. So they got all the information. Are you telling me that years into the future, Robin Williams, this robot, is just going to decide to go on foot and explore for all these robots when we're not in a wasteland? There is transportation. We see it. So Robin Williams is just, he's just on a quest, a very important quest, but let me just take my time.
There's a simple answer to this, Nick. Robots aren't allowed on buses, cars, airplanes, subways.
Right. I forgot about that sharp social commentary that this movie has.
There's just so much to stuff in this movie. And it doesn't balance it all well at all. But in a way, I think there's still it like Nick, you said, there's stuff that's in here by accident before somebody else gets in and ruins it. And I do think that's. So I don't think people ruin it. It's just more people then get good stuff in, and there's no time for all of it. Like, there's a concept that's like a through line in this movie, which is that Andrew ends up with a family. The family, Sam Neill, the patriarch, is a clockmaker. So he's a person who makes machines. And then Andrew's around these people. He sees him make machines, and then he's like, well, maybe you'll do that because you can't make art. That scares people. Hey, what a relevant topic for today.
Yeah.
You're a machine. You can't make art. What'd you replicate? Oh, I just studied the horse enough, and then
Where'd you take it from and stuff? Yeah,
right.
Where'd you copy it from?
And so he says, okay, well, instead, let's make clocks. Andrew makes clocks. Now he becomes a clockmaker. He makes machines. They have gears. They have springs. It works in an ordered way. Portia comes along, and she's an art restoration person, right?
Decades later,
her job is that she takes old statues, crumbling statues, and restores them to what they could be. She restores building. So it's like there's this theme of what people do for a living to either create things or sustain them or change them. You know, in the case of Oliver Platt's character, he works in robotics, but only because his father made the NDR. Then they went completely bust right as he was like, I was about to give them all skin. Like, I finally figured it out.
I always love to see Platt.
Oh,
I love Platt. I absolutely love to see
it. He's like a shot of energy into this movie.
He does.
But I just think that's like one of the key conceits to that movie or the themes is this idea of like making things, creation, and creation as something that humans only can do. And then as Andrew goes into becoming a full human at the end, he is making the artificial things that then people adapt. And it doesn't mean the people are artificial, right? There's the speech at the end with the court, you know, you use one of my organs, don't you? Yes. So you're partially artificial. Yes. Okay. So what's the line? Where does the line go from?
There's a lot of I mean, this is weird too, but I don't know if they were thinking of this as well in the movie, but a lot of like transition type of stuff kind of in there a little bit.
Yeah, it's a lot of like, well, once you've done this, are you now this? It's the ship of Theseus philosophical question, right? Like, if you replace a piece and a piece and a piece, at what point is it no longer the original thing? And at what point is it a new thing? And so it's like those things are in this movie and they do bring them up. It's just there's a lot of other stuff as well that's getting brought up. And some of those aren't as good, or some of those, you know, DNA elixirs are getting dropped. It's kind of, you know what it reminds me of as well? It reminds me of, and this is very subjective and insane, so I'm not going to say anybody should feel this way. It reminds me of reading Ray Bradbury stories in middle school, which is like, did you guys ever read like something like, I think it was called like The Veld and stuff like that, where it's this short story that's all about these people who have a VR room in their house. And The Veld is the name. It's a type of terrain in Africa. It's like a savanna. And the idea is this VR room makes the lions that are in this VR experience become real. And isn't that terrifying? Because like you thought it was just a thing, but the VR reality becomes reality. So it's just like this movie feels like I would love for Bicentennial Man to be made as an 8-10 episode HBO drama or Apple Plus, because the Foundation is a thing on Apple TV Plus, right, where it's like, hey, this is a story that's dealing with all these high sci-fi concepts, but we're going to give it 20 hours to delve into it. Each of these episodes, and when I refer to episodes, I mean like the Bicentennial Man, like here's year zero, the first year of him. That's an episode, right? Give each of these dates an hour, because there's so much that goes to why they pick out, okay, here's him. He gets kicked out from the family. Here's him finding his house and building it out of wood and making a place for himself in the world. Cool. That is something. Each of these episodes in the movie feel important, and they are moments worth telling. Mm-hmm. But when you smash them all together, there's whiplash. Nick is raising his eyebrows. He doesn't agree with
no, telling. I think I like, because it's funny, because you're right. There's like these little kernels of ideas and interesting things, and it just, I think in a weird way, instead of like feeling like, oh, like, interesting, it ends up feeling sort of like sloggy in a weird way in that last half, I think, of just like, okay, like, and then like, what, here's something, like, you're kind of like done with the interesting ideas. I don't know, it's just weird. It's like a weird vibe in the last like hour and a half of the movie, basically.
The last hours, I want to get laid. Like, Albert Platt gave me a robot wiener. I want to use this.
But no, I do like what you're saying, Cody, about those ideas. And the art, the one that struck out, I mean, yeah, was most relevant today is the whole, you know, robot making art thing. And like, why, like, there's a, like, the reason he makes art is to replace the horse, you know?
Right.
Like, the AIs on the computer, like, they don't have a reason why they're making this thing. Like, they don't know, there's no, like, why am I making this? That's because someone told me to, you know?
And it's even like, the bigger part, more than creation in the movie, is the idea that he creates it because he enjoys it. And he creates the thing to replace what he broke for Little Miss because he feels bad. And those two things, that he feels bad and that he enjoys making things, is where they're like, oh, this is actually not good. Because that means he's experiencing, quote unquote, feelings. And so there's something wrong with him, right? That's why Sam Neill takes him back to Stephen Root and is like, hey, man, what's up with this? Can you tell me about it? And they're just like, we got to get him out of his hands. And that seems like it's going to be the villain, but it's not. He's just there.
Yeah, for a couple Stephen Root can do some crazy voices. That didn't even sound like him at all.
I was going to say, I'm glad you brought up Lawnmower Man at the beginning of this episode, because if you recall, in that movie, there was also an evil villain that spoke with a weird voice. I feel like Stephen Root's doing a weird choice in this one, too. He's very prim and proper. He's up here.
It is an anomaly. No refund, no replacement. How much do you want?
I don't think I understand.
Well, clearly you realize the word, if this gets out, we'll have to recall our entire line. We're in people's homes, sir, with their children. If it is doing what you say, it can also run amok.
He disappears, you know. He's kind of good. No, but yeah, it's almost, I guess it's just traditional as far as its structure. Cause yeah, you think he's going to be, I think like in a weird way, they're kind of, you know, this is a Touchstone Disney movie. So it's like in a weird way, in another world, that is setting up a villain for like this, like, kidnapping that happens, and like the kids and the dad go looking for their robot friend. And like, that's another movie, but that's almost like how I think people expected this movie to be. Mm-hmm. And it's not really. I think.
And there's you know? There's him. There's the Brad Whitford shows up in the middle to defend him in court to get, you know, the access to the info. There's like a lot of movies that would be in this movie, and it's not about those. Like,
it's
you know what it is. Okay, I'm gonna make a big pitch. This movie feels so disjointed because there are first, middle, and third acts of like four different stories in it. And it's all about one guy's 200-year life. And it's like, no, those things that seem like they're the story, the robot, you know, inventor at the beginning, the court battle to get it back, the romance to fall in love, all of those seem like they should be a whole movie themselves. But it's like, no, it's just for this 5 years of his life. But what we're really stepping in here is the gradual change from I am a servant to this family to I want a little bit more. I want to create. Okay, now I'm doing this. Oh, now I have a friend who's this dog I'm going to take care of. It's so sad that he's only in one scene. That Wolfie should be in half the movie, in my opinion. You know, and so it feels very disjointed because you're shooting past these other, like, yeah, okay, he's going on a 20-year journey to find all these robots. How does that make any sense? Well, it makes sense for him because this is a necessary part of his journey to identify himself, which is to find the people like him, right? That's a whole thing with people when they kind of come to terms with their identities or who they are. They get into genealogy. They find out where they come from, or they find their found family, or they, you know, they find people like themselves who they fit in. That's the quest at that point. And he goes on that quest and realizes that there's nobody just like him. And at the end of that, he happens to meet, you know, Platt, and he goes, oh, you can make me skin. So maybe I don't need to find other robots like me. What I need to find is a way to become like these people who I am most like.
Or what I really need to find on my quest here is a vehicle to transport me quicker. Because this probably could have taken maybe a year, but this thing has taken me 20 years walking around the Earth.
Here's another thing about this movie. Exactly. Like the decisions that the movie is kind of... the movie is kind of making. So, for example, one of the very earliest scenes that we get with Andrew, he solves a chess game. And that's supposed to be something
that irritates you.
It's supposed to be something that's like that we're supposed to take note of. It's a computer. Of course, it's going to solve a chess game. Like that is like one of the very earliest things that it could do.
And
And somehow we're supposed to just appreciate that this is. So one thing that I was actually wondering, and I was like, okay, where to try to separate from my bias. I was like, okay, 1999, what do we think is possible? Because to me, my really quick and dirty and crude takeaway of this movie is it's more of a sociological time capsule to just reflect what we thought was possible for computers and androids and stuff like that.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's kind of interesting to me from a from an external perspective. But yeah, I was like, so I was like, okay, it's solving chess. 1999, I'm like, I would that I would bet money we had computers that could solve chess games.
I think like when was like it was like 70s or something they were doing computer chess or something like that.
I mean, hell, Doc Brown was playing chess with his dog in the 50s.
1957, a chess program was written by Alex Bernstein at MIT for an IBM 704.
And so it's not like 57. I expect. So it's just that the fact that we have it's presented as this to me when I think of an android. I think of something advanced, even a rudimentary android. I think of advanced, like honestly, like even like Rosie from Jetsons, like so something like that. That's still advanced, but it's still rudimentary or kind of primitive a little bit. But it's still advanced things. And so I think like the movie kind of puts this robot creature in front of you and it doesn't do a good enough job to establish what the rules are. What like technology or capabilities do these robots have? We're not really introduced. And so I think by it's showing the chess game, I think I get what it's trying to do, but this is not the right
kind
choice.
Like there's a moment later where it's toward the end with Portia where he like knows her heartbeat and all this stuff. And I feel like we never saw him be able to do that before. I mean, not so, that you need to know that, but like there's not really like a lot of this reading situation.
Well, I think there's an implication that the technology has continued to get better. So I would believe that stuff that he saw later on, like the perspiration or whatever, he wouldn't have that capability. But again, and I don't think that it needs to necessarily detail that stuff, but at least the way that it shows him progress and at what stage he is in life and his existence, like I think that's another big question I would say that the movie never takes the time to answer. Like it wants to say who am I a lot of times, but it actually never gives an answer even if that answer is wrong. It just says who am I and then moves on. Who am I? But it's like you didn't even give Robin Williams a chance to have that conversation in the film with himself, I feel like.
Yeah, he doesn't have a kind of like really dramatic emotional beat of himself trying to grapple with his who he is exactly. It's him bouncing off other things. You know, that's interesting. The chess thing, I hear you. I think its placement in the movie isn't to show because when he rolls up to the house, right, he steps out and they have to teach him everything. It's like this robot has nothing in his mind. And it's not so much that he's like, oh, I can play chess. I think it is trying to show him learning very rapidly what chess is and how to play it. But I don't think that's nearly because the other version of that, right, is like, well, we want to show him that he himself is able to learn things on his own.
He's like reading books page by page and stuff.
How do we do that? And it's like, they show him reading woodworking and stuff. But is there a version of that where it's like him looking at a piece of wood and we see through his vision like, oh, here's where I carve, here's where I do this. You know, I think chess is more, it's more easily understood. It's like, you know, it's shorthand for the audience in a way of like, you know, chess, he's doing chess, cool, he learned chess. But I totally hear you where you're like, yeah, that's not really impressive. I had the same thought about this movie being a time capsule on technology, what we thought was possible. There's a scene where Sam Neill's sitting in a chair and he's like, he's
playing crossword puzzle.
He's doing something.
He's got an iPad or something.
Well, he doesn't. IPad. That was my thought. I was like, when did laptops come out? Because this seems like where you'd find him.
It looked like an older laptop, like a really 90s laptop or something.
So it was just, yeah, you know, there's just like stuff like that where you're like, yeah, of course. They don't even have the concept that like cell phones don't exist in this movie, you know? And like that was the leap that came up six years later. And it's like everything is based around the phone now. It's just so interesting how there is that gap of like, yeah, that be a popular thing. No, it'll be something else.
There's sort of a weird mix.
Video phones at home.
There's one other. So I don't want to be. There's one other major gripe I have, and then I won't be a Debbie Downer anymore, and I'll get this out of the way.
Your eyebrow game has been off the chart this episode. As Cody's explaining this and that, you're like,
I mean, explaining is very kind of what I'm doing. I'm giving apologies and suggestions.
One part of me, of course, loves that when people love movies, no matter what movie it is, you know, I think that's cool and exciting. But this movie to me has a it's just its construction is so frustrating to me because it's so like, I don't know, just it's lacking at every level basically. And it's just like, man, it has no strengths for me to latch onto. But so the last thing that it really bothered me, and this really ties into what you were saying earlier, Cody, about it kind of having four stories in one or mixing or skipping. And that's when Robin Williams hijacks the death of Portia's mom and just starts going and oh, am I gonna be alone forever? And it's like, dude, Portia's mom, you just came back into their life. Grandma. And it was like, oh my god, like I was like, I was rooting for Portia to just like kick him out or something.
I had the same thought.
Growing as a human, you know, he's narcissistic now.
I had the same exact thought, Nick, 100%. When that happens, you're like, Jesus, this is awful, Andrew. Like, this is not the moment for you to grieve. And I get that it's like, well, the difference is Portia, he has known her literally like since she was 8 years old and has seen her grow through life. And you knew her as just, you know, mom or whatever. But that doesn't make it okay what he does in that scene to immediately go like, oh, she's gone. Will everyone I know leave? You're like, yeah, Jesus.
I feel like you should know that by now.
The reason it bothers me so much, I think, is because the movie lets him do it. And the movie like writes it so that's the scene. And so to me, it really undermines all the stuff that we're like it undermines Portia's autonomy to me and like puts her second fiddle as a character with like feelings and emotions.
I do think this movie suffers from the fact that like we as people have socially progressed like because of that. Half of these movies in this era would have that scene where the main character, the death is allowed to be about them, and all the side characters are like, "Oh, it's okay." And you're like, "No, dude. Like this
Why
bad thing happened
to
this
cry
family
and I don't."
And this woman shouldn't have to give you, you know, the emotional work as a robot to process her own mother's death. That's insane. Like, but yeah, I think that's how stories and movies were then. And
it's almost like that should be set up in that's an earlier thing, even before he's even in like with the dog dying or something. You know, like that's like a way to set that up. You know, like and having that conversation.
Funny, honestly. That is actually another thought I had, and it just ties into the greater themes or deficiencies. Is just like the times that it in the timeline of things, when Robin Williams encounters things, like I did a guffaw when he 100 years later, he finally encounters the term, this is a piece of shit. Like 100 years, he didn't encounter that, that phrase. So it's just
because everyone who curses gets like a charge, like in Demolition Man.
This is a post Demolition Man world. Yeah. No.
And the reason he doesn't get charged is because he's a robot. The little ticket takers don't recognize him saying shit.
I do think what just locked into place with me, Nick, is of you saying these two points where you're like 100%. It's almost like when they wrote this movie, because I think a lot of the things that I'm latching onto as being good nuggets of like all these different things, I bet they all come from the book, right? And so it's just how they placed them into this movie. I think in plotting out this movie, they maybe correctly identified what the key moments for his life are. Mm-hmm. And then like, and then we'll leave the stuff in the middle blank. The problem is they left the stuff in the middle blank. They didn't actually say, well, what would he have learned over 10 years of this? Instead, it's like, it's as if when we check in with Andrew, it's as if he's been turned off in a closet for those 10 years, unless it's explicitly shown on screen. And when it's explicitly shown on screen, it's, hey, here I am writing a letter to you, little miss. I'm on this journey. And then it's like 16 years later, he's almost the exact same as he was then. The difference is, it looks like he has mastered medicine, or he's
interesting question, because like at one point in the movie, like when after he's met Oliver Platt and he's, you know, getting all these various upgrades, I think it's the one where he gets a nervous system right before Oliver, he starts talking and he's talking about how he's been jealous and she humiliated me, this and that. And Oliver Platt goes, don't take this personally, but I'm just going to turn you off now. That is, it has a huge implication for it. Like, how many times has he just been turned off over the course of his 100-year life or whatever it is at this point? That, again, like, I think that's like the main problem with the movie is like they introduce so much. And God help me, yeah, I think you're right, Cody. This might be better as a TV series, because there's just so many things that are not to mention the world itself. How does, you know, they barely scratch the surface of how the world,
and they do a lot of establishing shots to show that the world's changed, which is, I mean, we see the super tall World Trade Center, you know, like they do a lot of these establishing shots, and you're like, look, it's the far future now, and you're like, it is kind of like, damn, you guys are giving a lot of time, especially when these jumps are happening every 5-10 minutes, to be like, now there's air cars.
The building where Portia lives really reminded me of the hotel in John Wick.
They live like in like Wayne Manor, you know, in the beginning.
Yeah.
That's another question. It's like, what's their like social status? Like, they seem to be rich.
You see David, makes clocks, and therefore he can live outside of San Francisco.
Well, okay, and this is another thing. Okay, this is like, I feel like the movie, I don't know what it's doing here. It is funny, but apparently Robin Williams has sold enough clocks enough clocks in one single month to make more than this corporate bigwig of this robotics company in a year.
Yeah.
I mean,
I love the idea of the robot has made a ton of money. I think that's great, but yeah, it's weird. They
detail the specifics of his revenue stream. Like he makes X in a month, and the other guy, he makes X in a year. And he just, apparently this is clock revenue. So I don't know.
Off clocks.
He's selling them on Etsy. His Etsy store's going off the charts.
It's all Dave buying them. Dave's just buying all
there's like not even internet like in this movie. It's just crazy.
Guys, as a clock fan, I'm here to say I doubt that his clock revenue in a month would be more than the CEO of a robotics corporation.
Well, so real quick, do we know is he the CEO of that company?
What job could he have in that position to have that kind
CEO?
The only thing I can think of is if he is like the manager of that department of that appliance, right? He's like, he is a middle manager of that thing. Because otherwise, how does Sam Neill get a meeting with the CEO? Like, how does it go all the way up?
Okay. So I would explain away the meaning because of the situation of the rope of Andrew, because he's one of a kind.
Sure.
So and they do establish that in the beginning, which is
CEO. He's NorthAm's CEO. Yeah, I'll just double check.
Wow. Yeah. So he does kind of insinuate that it could be a scandal, and they kind of let that go, which is I really didn't mind that. But yeah, they do imply that. So, I mean, that's kind of why I always assumed they were able to always meet, because they have him by the balls, it seems like, for the company.
You know,
because he's like, we don't want this word to get out.
I had the same thought about the money stuff, because they keep going back to this house and it's like an insane pool, and this like this movie's just watching the ultra elite wealthy figure out what it means to be sad and stuff. And that's like, I was thinking about it, I was like, that's so many movies where they're just like, well, we'll just explain away why they're able to do the plot of this movie, because otherwise people are struggling to survive. Like, I think that's the only reason half these movies are just like, yeah, and they're wealthy for whatever reason, who cares? Because we just need to see them have a car, have a home, and be able to like fly somewhere to solve the problem, as opposed to like if a movie plot happened to me today, before the apocalypse, because now we are in a movie plot, but if a movie plot was to happen to me today, it's like, sorry dude, I can't do anything to solve your problem. I do not have any means to help you, and I'm not impoverished.
I can't travel to Antarctica on a whim. Okay,
so but it's interesting that this is a really interesting point just about movies in general, I think, Cody, because Recently, over the last couple months, I have found myself watching quite a few movies that are based around families who are noticeably wealthy. And sometimes it sticks out and sometimes it doesn't. And I think mm-hmm. it really comes down to the skillfulness that the movie can establish empathy and relatability to characters that may not share a social stance or whatever. And I think that this movie, it does, especially in the beginning, it does feel like it's a very wealthy family and stuff like that. And yeah, I think the movie itself just is very, it just plays with money. I think it just doesn't really have a concept.
There's a crazy line dropped at the very beginning when the delivery men who are dropping off Andrew, one of them says like, "Oh, it's a pretty big house," and the other one responds, "Eh, I've seen bigger." Well, so it's like Jesus.
And then like Samuel doesn't even tip them or anything when they leave. You know,
I know.
They just turn on the robot.
And the girl, you know, the older daughter, she says, "Oh, the neighbors down the street have one." So it's meant to be like, meant to show that he's not that special. Like, he is not one of a kind. He is not unique. And I guess this family's not ultra wealthy.
They got like it's like an air fryer or something.
Okay. Yeah.
It's like, it's like everyone has a slave bot. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
Okay. Cody, as this movie's defender, how do you feel about an entire family member's just disappearance essentially from the story? Like
the sister,
the older daughter's whole arc of this movie is baffling.
I'm like, I thought the same thing. I was just
like she turns into a Back to the Future character and then disappears.
Nick, you see, sometimes you have to cut your family off, right? And that's what she did because she was like, "I'm out of here.
Like
I'm
Griff
done.
Tannen.
I'm not joining the Watchmaking Dynasty. I'm getting out of here."
It's true, but that is so funny. They are like in a different movie. They are in Back to Future 2, basically.
Fully making out, like they are one step away from just full on having sex in the driveway when the mom shows up
in their costumes. It's crazy. It's,
yeah, in their sci-fi punk gear.
Hi, Mom. Grace, is it possible for you to find somewhere more private to do that?
No problem. Just give me your credit disc and we'll get a hotel room.
What did you say to me?
Let's go.
What did you say to me, young lady? You get off that bike this minute and you are grounded. Go on, get out of here, you piece of scum.
Yeah, the mom's like drinking and stuff. And then she's like, and it's like weird that like this is years later and she's still acting as Andrew's new in a weird way.
I think that scene and the
how
money
old
thing,
is she supposed to be?
She's like, you're grounded.
The daughters are like in their 30s.
We're getting
at
a lot
point.
Of mixed signals of like age in that Miss. Scene.
It's very insane.
She was supposed to be older than Little Miss. That was one of the big things this movie that was so confusing. Like, it does that scene where it's like, you know, it skips like, you know, several years later. And both of them apparently are still living at home, the two daughters.
I mean, have you seen the house? I'd live at home too.
Yeah. Well,
but I mean, it's just like, how old are they supposed to be? Because like the way they interact with each other and Andrew, it makes it seem like, is she supposed to be like 18 or something?
I think she's supposed to be mid to late 20s and Little Miss is early to mid 20s. I think that's the age.
What throws it off for me is because the actress, M. Beth Davis, I believe is her name, she was 34 when she made this movie.
Miss Honey from Matilda.
Yeah, yet in this scene, her sister, who is supposed to be older, looks like she's 10 to 15 years younger than her. So it's like, what?
They keep you young.
And that's why they still live at home, because you can't move out into San Francisco in a place to live when you're in your mid 20s. Like, you have to room with somebody. And hey, you know what? Their house is so big, she probably is never bothered half the time.
Yeah, probably doesn't even see
with the mom getting like mad at her, and the money scene with the CEO. I fully believe those are scenes that were like, we just got to get some jokes in this movie. And it's like, you really don't. Because the money thing, it doesn't matter. That joke doesn't do anything. All it does is, makes Nick fucking his eyebrows go off the back of his head. And then the scene with the other daughter, it's like, it does nothing. It was just to show the mom's upset. And yes, Ryan, the mom is drinking the entire time. She always seems to be like upset about Andrew. It's
freaking
at first,
robot.
And then continues. But that's never resolved. It's just, there's a lot of stuff where they like, they again, they're like, there is an angle where this movie doesn't have nine different stories and it stays with that first family for a long time. Okay. And we see that the robot drives a wedge between Sam Neill and his wife because they're just like,
well, and that you just nailed on a crazy thing, because they say in one, it makes me wonder if something was cut. Like, was this movie originally 6 hours long? Because there's a scene later in the movie when he refers to Sam Neill. He says, I'm pretty sure we'll have to play the tape, but he refers to Sam Neill and the wife, suggesting that at some point she accepted him.
Yeah.
But that's never seen. And I'm like, how is based on what they set up in the beginning, where you're like, it is clear the wife does not like Andrew. There are so many scenes where like they're eating dinner and he is like framed behind her shoulder in the other room. And she's just like, he's looking at me, isn't he? You know what I mean? Like, this movie could easily be turned into that that Mrs. Doubtfire fan trailer.
I think there is.
Like, they could do the same thing with this. There's so many scenes
it's called Megan. We've all seen it. Go ahead. So,
oh, that's true.
So this movie, what I would describe as maybe its operational weakness is it does almost exclusively telling, not showing. And so there's a lot of stuff that is just dropped through dialogue and stuff. And for me, the biggest culprit comes in the beginning, and it comes after. And again, this just totally tells me that whatever went into making this movie didn't have the sense to order these types of things correctly or emphasize the right things, because we get that chess scene that I already complained about, blah, blah, blah. But then in the CEO's office, when they first bring Andrew in and he's like, yeah, he's doing all this creative shit, blah, blah, blah. They say, when they drop the line that says, he says he enjoys this. And I'm like, dude, why didn't you show us him saying, like, in with the horse in his hand saying, wow, I really enjoy this. Like, even something as blatant as that would have been like, oh, we get to see Andrew grow. No, we're just told he did.
I could see that one. I could see, because he enjoyed, like, just his idea of him giving it to him was, I feel like it's like, oh, that he wanted to do that. I think that makes it make.
I just want to see it, because to me, that's an opportunity we got to miss, seeing Andrew develop in a way that progresses the story in the way that it wants to. You know, we want the story is trying to, you know, bring us into Andrew's uniqueness and identity and humanity, I think. And
like,
that
there should have been a cap to the scene when he's building the horse, because we just see him methodically build the horse. There's no moment where he's done and he takes it up and looks up at it admiringly and sort of caresses it. Like, look at this thing.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just going to say, and then in that scene, if that had happened, it would just be his eyebrows go up a little bit, because at that point he doesn't have. And so I thought I was just having is like, maybe you give Andrew a more emotive face right at the start so that you have him not emoting, but we can see that he enjoys it, because how else are you going to see his, I mean, that's an interesting idea, right? Is the idea that he develops feelings before he can express them in a way people recognize.
I like that.
So if you keep him as robot, I'm on board, but I do agree, Nick, you should have a scene where he explains himself. We see him look admiring at it. Even if we can't register that what he's doing is enjoying it, somebody then could ask him, it's like, is everything okay, Andrew? And he's just like, I made this.
Like, or know? Maybe like they're asking him to do something and he's like trying to finish his art thing. And he's just like, oh, I'm just trying to finish this and stuff. And they like, and kind of denying his servitude or whatever to like finish something or something like that.
So we do get a moment like that, but I think it comes just a little too late. And that's when Andrew goes into the lawyer friend's office and his clock is there. And he's like, oh, this is one of my favorites. So we get to see Andrew appreciate his own art and suggest that something's coming from inside. And so, again, I think like the movie knew it had to do that. But it's like, okay,
it's all in the wrong order or something.
Yeah. There's some steps that we totally miss or were cheated out of. Like, for example, I think that would be a moment I say I was cheated out of, because that's a moment. That's a moment that contextually did happen within the story. We just didn't get to see it. And it's just like, that would have been a great moment.
And it would also kind of been the first spark of, oh, Andrew is different. And we kind of, I agree, Nick. I think that the problem of the movie is because it crams so much in, there's a lot of telling, not showing, just to hit these beats that then makes them seem out of order, or like, oh, this could have been a version of that scene earlier if you just condense.
To have like the impact later or something.
Yeah.
We get, again, another thing that it does, like the whole when he gets a dog, I was like, dude, this should have been another like That's a whole episode. Yeah, exactly. That's a whole. Right, that's a whole episode. Just him and the dog. You know.
Oh man, that would be a great bottle episode.
Just only two episodes at the dog.
I swear, if they would have just tossed in a 30-second scene of Andrew and the dog walking on the beach, I would have been. Oh, this movie. Yeah, I would have been on board. Just something. Come on, give me something, man.
Yeah, especially because I think we have two scenes with him. One where he shows up at the house, and one when he takes him to go to Portia's house. And he's like, "Well, I want to talk to somebody. He's not great company." I like that because it implies that he's been sitting there talking to the dog for weeks, and he's just like, "Yeah, I don't really know." But he also is then like, "Yeah, he's hungry. He drinks water, whatever." And so it's kind of like. It's out of order, like we said, right? Because it makes it seem like it's the same day he got the dog because he doesn't know how to take care of it. But also, what? Like, it seems like he should have spent more time with it. I agree. Give us a scene. Instead of him going to Portia and being like, this is a dog. I want to talk to you. Give us just a 5-minute quiet scene of him with this dog figuring stuff out, understanding. Because that's
the, what if he ends up cooking like a huge human meal for the dog
That's the thing about pets is you can put them in stories where a person is otherwise quiet and silent, and the way they interact with them shows their emotions. The way they interact with them shows what kind of person they are, right? That's why there's that whole goddamn book, right? Save the Cat. Like, if we just have him with his dog, and he's not even robot mode at that point. He has face. So he could emote, and we could see that, like, this is him learning, because there's a scene later on that ties to this thought, I swear, where when he's getting the central nervous system, and Platt's just like, hey, just so you know, when you do this, you're going to, like, feel a lot. It's going to be overwhelming
ready for that.
Because you don't have any of these other things, and you're going to have all of these sensations, and it's going to be a ton. And it's like, that I think is this beautiful idea that I don't think, like, there are so many more emotions than just sadness and joy. And like, we don't see them often in movies. There's not time for them. But if we're making a movie about a robot becoming a man, I want to see him experience all those things for the first time. And when they do have those beats, it's nice, right? The first time he's hungry, the first time he farts, like, it's like, yeah, this is like a robot experiencing a bunch of shit that's new to him. And he's like, even though he's so intelligent, the experience of it is, it's more than just reading it in a book, right? The first time you fall in love is more than just seeing people fall in love on movies. And yeah, why don't we have those? And that can start with baby steps as here's the first beat with him experiencing these emotions and this feelings with his dog. And maybe he's just with his dog for a couple years and we see the dog pass away. And that's when he's like, fuck, I need to like be around people because they'll last longer, you know, like
such a grand vision for the movie. I mean, that's the one thing where I'm kind of coming around is just like understanding exactly all the stuff that is in the movie, but this is more than two movies. This is more than three movies.
Because
the thing, I don't know. I guess I'm thinking of, there are two ways to say 200 years. There's a small 200 years and there's a literal 200 years. This movie wants to show you the literal 200 years instead of the, compartmentalized 200 years as like one piece of time. Instead, it wants to show you everything. And it's just like, you cannot contain that much information and the intimacy that it really wants you to have. Because that's the other thing. I think there's a story here that's maybe just Andrew and Portia that still conveys all the same stuff of discovering humanity. That could be a 2-hour movie, whatever. But you're not doing just Andrew and Portia. You're doing Andrew and the dog. You're doing Andrew and Sir. You're doing
That's like the first part of the movie is him and Sam Neill's relationship.
Yeah, and
which I kind of like a little bit of that stuff is great.
Well, Sam Neill's an interesting. He's a great actor. He's a great actor. Sure. Yeah. He's...
Okay. Maybe this is slightly controversial because it doesn't seem like anyone's had any negative thoughts on Sam Neill. I mean, we haven't brought him up that much, but I had the distinct feeling that Sam Neill maybe didn't want to be in this movie. Like a lot of his mannerisms in the movie feel like he's sort of smirking and he's almost like thinking to himself. I had the sense that he was just like, "What is this movie?" Like,
it's understated.
I think I picked
it
up
been a result of the tones, like the comedic and the drama, not necessarily merging very well, and maybe he didn't quite know how to wrestle with that.
I think I picked up on what you picked up on, but I didn't. attribute the same motivations. I don't think that it doesn't seem like that. I just think it's kind of bad direction to me. It's like, because again, to me, it reflects the creative forces don't know how to position these pieces right. And I think like the most egregious example is that what I just call it the slave master scene in my head. And that's when Sir is just saying, you know, this is great property, but we still value property. So we got to treat it like a human being. Like that scene is like, Sam Neill, like I could see in his head. Yeah. I don't know what I'm doing here because I don't think they know what they're doing.
I will say this to Sam Neill's credit. There was one scene, I empathized with his character when, I mean, he's in the wrong, but like when he's basically going through empty nest, you know, what's that called? Syndrome? You know, he's an empty nester. Like all his kids at that moment. I would admit, I didn't think this was great, but there were several scenes in this movie where I teared up. One of which was after Little Miss gets married and it's just Andrew and Sam Neill by the pool or whatever. And he's just like, oh, what a great day. Did you record it, Andrew? Why don't you show me the day? And he starts crying and you realize he's like, my kids are leaving now. Like they're 45 years old and
just
they're leaving.
Just that projection technology. Why doesn't that come up again? Like that.
I hate that it has to come out of his head. It should come out of his eye, right? It should just play from his eye.
I'm just saying, it's really cool. It's a cool effect even for the time. And I'm like, there's not one other time this happens in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, in the beginning when he shows the laws.
Well, and that's it. You got to do it one more time. Third time.
No, but I like that scene a lot too.
It's a great scene.
And I think that's another scene, either like make that scene longer or something, because that scene to me does all the stuff that the Little Miss death scene was trying to do.
It's almost like that should happen and that like ends a chapter and we jump ahead 50 years. It's kind of like, yes. That's like how I think they probably should have done. Maybe there's like three jumps, like, you know, three acts. Like, there's, like, 50 years, 50 years, 50 years or something
and
like that.
And each act ends with the death of somebody close to him. And then it's like, cool, that is the end of a beat. And we come back around to him. And that's why it propulses him through this life of, like, and that at the end he gets to die, too. Because it's like, I don't want to die. I don't want everybody to leave me. I love that that's the thing this movie wants to grapple with, right? That's, like, the heart of being
condition.
A human. And, yeah, the human condition is that it must pass. It has to pass. It has to come to an end. And that is good. Like, it's good that that happens. Talking about that scene by the pool, I don't think it needs to be longer. I think every other scene that's trying to have that punch needs to be as long as this. But they fill the movie with too many, like, there's too much shoe leather of, like, this has to happen, and this has to. It's like, nah, man, we could smooth all of this out. I think maybe they were trying to be too precious with the book and adding their comedy elements, and that's why it's a jumbled mess where it's like, you know, if this was I was going to make a really insane analogy, and I don't think it works, but it's like, it's all of these threads are things that you would like, but all knotted up, you're like, I'd rather not unknot this. I'd rather watch a movie that does this thread, a movie that does this thread, and a movie that does this thread. Does that make sense? Like,
I don't know when I'm going to get to drop this in, so now it seems like a perfect movie, or time, because you're mentioning other
perfect
movies.
Perfect movie? It's a perfect movie?
No, yeah, you know, Bicentennial Man. Sight and Centennial Man, am I right?
You're cooking?
There is a movie... It's on DVD or it's on something that's available out there, Cody. It's called After Yang.
Oh yeah, I was singing After Yang too.
After Yang is what this movie wanted to be. I think like this is for us. Like I think what you want if you watch this movie, there will be, I don't know. It's just, that was the movie I was thinking of most. It's very recent. So listeners, if you're hearing this, there's a movie called After Yang. It's pretty good. And it does a lot of the stuff that this movie is trying to do.
The other movie I was thinking of that I want to watch is Artificial Intelligence, AI. I feel like those two movies,
I haven't rewatched it in a while.
And they came out like 18 months apart, you know, like.
Oh, wow. Well, I wanted to watch that in preparation of this. I didn't get to, but there's a lot of that's the other thing. It's like this movie, just spitballing other movies. There's so many other movies that have talked about this in more complete fashions. Like, you know, I think I would say Blade Runner, Ghost in the Shell. Even there's another movie I just recently watched called Face of Another, and that one really specifically deals with facial identity and then how that identity ties internally. And so I think these questions of identity are really interesting and they don't really ever get old, but this movie really is just jamming more than that. It's like, I don't know, it's just a ton of stuff and just not, there's not, it's instead of too many cooks, it's too many ideas.
Yeah. After Yang, yeah, for sure. Cause it was just like about, I mean, the setup for that is basically a similar thing. This family has a robot that's kind of a caretaker and something happens and it's just like, and just the idea of, yeah, is it about being human and memory and connection and all that kind of stuff is all there in that movie. And it's a nice little tight little indie movie.
Yeah. So I would, I like sometimes if I see a movie like this, knowing there's another movie out there that to me does a successful portrayal of its ideas and concepts, that's really valuable. So I think like Bicentennial, maybe we can say Bicentennial Man crawled. So After Yang Can Walk, or what's the expression?
Yeah. I wanted to watch Artificial Intelligence 2 while watching this because I haven't really revisited that. And I know that movie has a lot more like a somber tone throughout. And I think it's a similar thing. It's a journey. It's a Pinocchio story. It's all that kind of stuff. And and goes hard at the end with like long lasting where it's like thousands of years into the future or something like that. Not just 200, you know?
Oh, you, well, speaking of the time, I looked at my notes because I have a lot of exclamation points after this. So at the end of the movie, so we've kind of touched on the fact that this movie, like, you know, just barely like just show, you know, through establishing shots shows you the world and wow, this crazy futuristic world. How far into the future is it? At the end of the movie, it's revealed when Andrew became operational.
Oh, yeah.
This movie came out in 1999. The movie posits that Andrew was created in the year 2005.
Revenge of the Sith was just about to come out. It was in April, I think.
Is this like an alt? Did they really like? Was the idea like? Well, I mean, usually when
Andrews like are around the corner.
Well, right around the corner, man. But usually with movies like this, like, are you kidding? The IMAX just came out. Like, the future is ours. But no, but it's like usually with movies like this, they at least set it for, you know, 30, 40 years in the future. This movie's like, yeah, we're thinking 6 years we'll have fully anthropomorphized androids.
I've been wanting to bring it up for a while of like the initial design of Andrew. What do you guys think of that? Because it's kind of a mixture of the definitely, you mentioned Rosie the Robot. They're going for like old Epcot looking robot. And I was thinking about, I'm like, I don't, it looks maybe too much like, I mean, I like the idea of it being kind of retro, like it looking like the Tin Man from like, and there's even a reference to that, I think, in this. But like, it's a little bit, I don't know if it's very good. I like the intro, the credit sequence is great. There's a lot of cool, interesting stuff like that. And there's like some cool kind of like, things going on in his like back and everything, but I don't know, and maybe it's just because they wanted Robin Williams in that suit. I guess he's in there.
There's a version.
I don't know
if
I like the design that much.
I mean, I just think there's a version of this movie where that design totally works. I just think the rest of the stuff that's going wrong, like even okay, this is gonna sound really crude, but like if they just put like a sepia filter on the camera, like all of a sudden his color scheme like fits way more, he blends in. But right now, yeah, he looks out of place, like he belongs in another time period.
Yeah, it's like a very toyetic kind of look to it a little bit. When I think, but I do appreciate the old school vibe though. I kind of like that. But
he reminds me of what like robot toys looked like in the early 2000s.
Yeah, like from like Radio Shack. You know,
yes. Like, do you remember the robot dog? Yeah. Like, I just sent a link across. Let me show you something on the old internet.
Yeah.
Use your face projector, your head projector.
Yeah. Hold on. Yeah. There you go. So, you know, there's these old like Poochies or whatever, you know, they have that. There's like blue steel metal look.
Like a Furby or something, you know?
Yes, exactly. This movie's coming out at a time where like those kind of like robot toys are starting to be a thing. And it's like, the next leap is they're going to have a person sized one that takes care of everything in your house. Being in 2005, I could believe.
Yeah.
You know, giving this movie a little bit more credit than it probably deserves. Maybe there's even like a Metropolis influence.
No, I think you're right. I think you could be on that. I think there's a mixture of that. Like there's like some big ideas like they're like, wow, like Metropolis, like the, you know,
oh, man.
Best one of sci-fi movies ever. And it's like, I think like there's some, it's, I think there's a mixture, and I think it's like this weird Disney soup or something happened. Like because there's something that this is what caught my eye that's making me more cynical about it, is that it does end with a Celine Dion song too. And I was thinking like, they were just,
and you only have room in your heart for one ending. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was just like thinking like there's some kind of thing going on with this where they're like, this is going to be huge.
This could be a thing.
Like the love story of the year, you know, like this is only 2 years after, you know, Titanic. And I don't know.
This movie had a budget of around $100 million. This was a huge movie.
Yeah. So I think there's a little bit of like, it feels like a script probably that got passed down. Some ideas stuck, some didn't, some rewrote things and just kind of like, yeah, just kind of a blender of stuff.
Well, you know, what's interesting is the original short story that it is came out, you know, whenever the book that the Bicentennial Man is adapting as well only came out in like 1992.
Mm.
It was like a novel version of that short story only came out, you know, seven years
before. It feels like something I would have been like from like the 50s or something, or 60s or something. I don't know.
Yeah, the original short story, I do believe, because like I said, there's two things. It's the Positronic Man and...
Which one's the short and which one's the long one?
So the Bicentennial Man is the name of the short, the novelette that came out in 76.
Okay.
And then the Positronic Man, it came out in 1992. And that itself is like an expanded version of the Bicentennial Man short story. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the script floated around as soon as like that came out, but it's just a thought.
So we kind of jumped around. I wanted to bring up the Pepsi girl. What do you got? And do you guys remember the Pepsi girl commercials? This is with Little Miss in the actress that's Little Miss.
Yes. Yeah.
She was the voice of a generation, you know, and I didn't, this is literally the only note I took that actress that's Little Miss is a Hallie Eisenberg, whose brother is Jesse Eisenberg.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I was thinking that too, because I was like, this movie just 2 years later would have been totally different just with the internet. And I think like there's like, even the CEO isn't like a tech bro, you know, or like someone of this, that era, like they have like this old school, you know, I don't know. It's like cartoon CEO guy instead of like,
it was pre 9/11, Ryan. That's all you need to know.
I know. It totally would have been totally different just a couple years later. And I think it would have probably even gone more into like the, like AI does, which I think people probably thought was also going to be more of a lighthearted Haley Joel Osment vehicle. And it's like a weird fucking movie where it ends with like the bottom of the ocean robots from, and humans are dead. It's just crazy. I don't know. So
it should go. Spoilers for artificial intelligence began at the Stanley Kubrick project. So
yeah. And I think, yeah. And so it's, I don't know. It's interesting. Like, I think I love everything you're saying, Cody, but I agree with Nick 100% too, that this thing's a little bit of a, like, I was like I remember bringing this up, and it's a funny idea, we're doing this for 200th episode, but I was just like, I don't know if that movie works, because it's been on TV. I remember catching little bits and pieces, and like, I don't know, just a little bit of a strange one.
Bits and pieces, because it's all about the 200 year journey, man, of Andrew Martin going from an NDR to Andrew Martin the human, the oldest human, older than, aside from Methuselah and other biblical figures.
Yeah, am I nuts to feel like the next step, and I know they mentioned this, is like him creating life himself somehow, like the end? Like,
oh yeah, when they say, oh, you can't be a human because it's not fair to have an immortal human. Or yeah, an immortal human. I was like, how does that even work? Is there some implied like his reproductive function? Like system does work, but it would make a robot.
No, they're just saying we can't call you a human now because what it, his positronic brain is the thing that makes him functionally immortal, and they're saying if we declare you a human now, you'll never die, and if you're a human, as we know by history,
they were talking about offspring. Remember when they say,
well, when he's, I think they're mainly in the courtroom scene, the first courtroom scene, when he wants to be declared a human to, you know, to validate his marriage with his wife, which is another huge thing that could have had a whole movie about, like, society's reaction to this event. Mm-hmm. I think in this scene, they're basically just saying like, no, you're immortal, you can't die. Like, I don't know if they mentioned offspring. I think the offspring bit comes up when Oliver Platt's like, hey, I can give you.
I was just thinking, know, like, maybe that's like, it's almost like setting up in a way, like him creating, like there's the idea of him creating art and stuff is like, that's the next step of evolution.
Well, he says,
of this,
like,
guy
I can give you all the, you know, basically like the bits and pieces, but you're obviously not going to be able, he has a line where he's like, obviously you're not actually going to be able to reproduce.
Yeah, but that's like setting up an idea, like, well, then he's
but
going to
that idea,
like he's
up,
like,
yeah,
he's special, he's going to somehow, you know.
I think that's, yeah, that's what I was like, I was taking away, is like, they were, I thought they were implying he could reproduce, And I was like, "That, how does that make sense?"
this could have been this, like a lot of other scenes in this movie. There could have been a scene where he has sex with Portia, and then at the end, she's like, "Oh, yeah, I mean, I didn't really feel anything. Like, you know, usually there's a, you know, whatever." He's like, "Oh, well, that won't do." And then the next scene is him, like, you know, you see, it's like, look who's talking. You see, like, the sperms going through and everything.
Yeah, there's all the thing with the sperm dying and stuff, and it's like,
damn it! I was just—I wanted to. That was one of my first notes. He's like,
they die.
Was when he talks about when he's meeting with Sam Neill, and he talks about all the sperm dying and how sad that is. And I thought, like, I was just like, damn, this scene is talking about the life cycle, and it's focusing on what happens to all the other sperm. And it's, well, they die, Andrew, and it's like this scene is getting a beat because this is important to the concept of the movie, which is that. If you don't, and that's he takes that lesson, and that's why he becomes a human, is because if you are a thing that could become a human and you don't, that's sad. But he has the potential, so he fights through like every sperm that created every single one of us, and he, you know, creates his own egg and hatches himself. He births himself into a man, and it's just wild that that's like a scene in this movie is Sam Neill describing to Robin Williams the robot how sperm create life.
Yeah,
and if they don't, they die.
So. Of all these millions of sperm, only one makes it?
That's true.
What happens to the others?
Well, they die.
They die? One feels badly for them.
No one does.
Well, and that's a crazy scene on right there, and also the scene when Oliver Platt is you know, it's the scene where Oliver Platt's like, I can basically make you like a dick, basically I can make you, give you like, you know, a reproductive system that you won't be able to use, but you'll have, and that moment when Robin Williams is Andrew is basically explaining to him what sex is and how like a life altering thing it is, like every time you have it, like the way he explains sex is just like, oh my god, like even Oliver Platt's like, oh my god, that's,
oh, yeah. He's like, it's beautiful.
Like, he's explaining how, like, you know, two people become one, and then when you come apart, you know, and all that.
It's
stuff.
Just like when Lawnmower Man takes his lady into the cyber VR space and they become a dragonfly. Yes. Just like that.
I mean, these two movies do really make a perfect pair.
I'm saying.
I mean, you called the art or the thematic links, and
yeah,
it's
the
there.
Duology, man.
Yeah, the duology.
It's When an immortal being becomes human, it's beautiful and worthy. When a human tries to become God, they become too powerful. They lose their mind. They're not ready for it, and it's only a bad thing. The only movie where you become God, and that's a good thing, I guess, is like Lucy.
Prometheus.
Prometheus.
I was thinking that too, because I was just like, "Oh, creating life." I don't know. What?
Well, I was gonna say, isn't that the kind of the rudimentary difference between DC and Marvel? DC's got all gods becoming humans, and Marvel's got humans becoming gods. So
humans becoming gods, except for the character of Thor, who is an actual god,
right?
A part of their
with
movies.
The one exception.
He throws a wrench in that analogy, but I do love it. It is a good one.
Okay, a quick side note. I think this has popped up on the show before. Nick's hate of the film Prometheus. Nick, I have a hypothetical situation here. If I were to throw you inside a room with a TV, and I put a gun to your head, and like, you have one movie you could watch, Prometheus or Bicentennial Man, what movie are you going to choose?
For sure. So,
you can take the gun out. You don't need a gun.
Well, I mean,
you're just stuck in a room.
You can put a gun to my head. I'll answer.
I have a gun to your head. I'm chaining you up to the wall. I'm whipping you.
Yeah. it's basically the room from Saw. There's a TV in there. What movie are you watching?
I've got you naked on the Casino Royale chair. I'm ready to crush your balls.
I'm crushing your balls with a piece of rope, and you have to watch one movie.
I'll stop doing this if you choose one of these movies. Which one is it going to be?
So, the quick answer is I will watch Prometheus.
Yeah! We did it!
You found a movie worse than Prometheus? Yeah!
We did it!
The main deciding factor behind that is that it's been longer since I've seen Prometheus. And I actually, someday I'll give it another chance because there's enough time has passed. Maybe I'll sing a different tune. So I don't, but yeah, I for sure would. Just because that movie is, even if that movie infuriates me, like to a degree of the logic that it follows and all that stuff, it's at least better made than this movie.
It's a more complete tale. Like, it has some ideas and they stick with them. They're not having like 30 different ideas in one thing and they're just barely scratching the surface of each one.
But that's another one about life and creation and stuff too, and androids and stuff. And
where do we come from? Like, what's the purpose of life type thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick, you are a man I know who, you love the concept of building yourself up, actualization. Bicentennial Man is just that. It's about a guy who's making, like, it's as if he was in the gym 24/7. Now he's deadlifting, 500. I mean, just saying, is there an arc there that you can respect?
In Bicentennial Man, I mean, of course, conceptually, that's a concept I resonate with, but
unfortunately, we never see how much is Andrew able to bench.
I never see him in the gym.
Another dropped plot point.
Yes,
I mean, he only lifts like boxes and stuff. Really, he's not like super strong.
It just shows him doing dishes. So I don't know what his strength levels are.
We don't know his numbers. That's fair.
He does hold that big log. Remember, he's like walking at the big beach log.
Yes. And that's where it shows you, like, oh yeah, he's like a robot man. He's can carry a whole big log.
Yeah, they should have what's the Arnold movie that is carrying a big log?
Commando.
Commando. They should have done that. God damn it! Isn't it? Huge missed opportunity.
It's probably a heavy log, even though it's dried or hollow beach water.
Driftwood.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Well, I think it seems like our thesis for this, our consensus rather for this movie is a lot of ideas put in. They're just too crammed in, and there's not enough time to expand on any one thing. It's just a ton of a mishmash of ideas, and it seems like that's the general consensus. Like, just to wrap this up, because we don't want this to be a 200 years long episode. Any kind of closing thoughts on Bicentennial Man, guys?
Yeah, I mean, it is the whole. I mean, we didn't really talk about it, like that. He's basically falls in love with his granddaughter of the other woman he loved,
Back to the Future looks exactly like her grandma.
I don't necessarily. I think, and I like her. I mean, it's only been in a few movies I've seen, really, and I, fell in love with Miss Honey for sure, but as I don't know if she feels very flat, like almost robotic too in the movie, I think, and that kind of maybe that's something, and maybe that's purposeful because he's giving me a look, but there's maybe. I think there's something maybe that's part of one, that's one of the other kind of little marks against it. I think maybe it needs some more life to her or something that's going on, like there's missing. Like you mentioned David earlier, when Platt comes shows in, it gives some energy to the movie. All of a sudden, I'm like, oh yeah, even though it has that goofy freaking dancing robot stuff,
Galatea,
that's annoying.
Come on, respect.
But I guess Robin is upset with her too, so it gives us permission to hate her as well, I suppose. But it's like,
if you don't turn her off, I will.
Yeah.
What does he say? Like at that one moment, he's like, "Do you have like a drill device?
Do you have an impact drill?
An impact drill."
But yeah, I think But no, I agree. There's some good ideas and stuff, and I can see this. I can see definitely being bored of this as a kid when it came out. I probably did not really grasp it and didn't expect what, because I would have been only like 12 or something. But I don't know. I loved Robin Williams. It's great, and he was probably the first. I mean, for a lot of people our generation, one of the first like celebrity deaths that hit hard, kind of thing.
Yeah,
and because he was a great presence, and stuff, and so. It's a bummer he was in a couple stinkers, but I don't know. Just it was a big one. So
but I think you make another good point that really undermines the ending as well for me. And you were talking about the romance that develops between Portia and Andrew. And I think the whole first scene is so, well, actually there's so much animosity built between Andrew and Portia that, again, I feel like Portia's kind of undermined. It's just like, I wouldn't want you around because of the way that you've treated me. And
says that at one point. It's like, just so we're clear, I don't like you.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, it's such a, there's a chemistry that it gets there. I believe, like when they kiss and he can feel it and all that stuff. I definitely believe that stuff. But there again, there's just some steps missing that just don't explain the complete chemistry that I think
it almost it almost seems to suggest it's like, this dog isn't giving me anything. Like, I'm not getting anything out of this dog. Because the next scene, he goes to her after they've established that they don't like each other. He's like, so, hey, I'm on a family. Like, my dog doesn't say anything to me. Like, he doesn't talk to me at all. He doesn't play chess with me.
I don't understand why the kids all hate it. Like, even, like, Portia, Little Miss's kids all hate this robot. And it's just like, I don't know. It's the...
Well, I think that's supposed to be the thematic bigotry of anti-robots. Because I remember, like, when
you get bigotry from your upbringing, and it's like the and so I'm like, what, they should love him too, just like the, you know, Little Miss does. It's weird.
I think that's kind of I do think it's a little bit of it's their mom seems obsessed with Andrew as a concept. So if you grew up and your mom was talking about how great her friend was for 30 years. And then you see him, you're like, that's a fucking robot. I don't care. To me, he is a blender. Mm. Like, what, you care too much about this thing. I think it's a mix of that, right? It's a mix of, this is somebody who their mom had this incredible connection to that she seemingly didn't have with their father. And that was a sticking point. And also, like, it's just like anything. You don't like everybody everybody else likes, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's a concept of, like, I don't know you. I don't have that immediate connection. So I just take it easy, Andrew. And then you're coming on like, oh, you look just like her. You're not allowed to do that. And it's like, fuck you, dude. That's my yes. That's my grandma. Why are you being a dick about this, you know? She was raised by Bradley Whitford, who didn't like robots. So, you know, that's...
Bradley and it's Whitford. I don't know. It's just like when the kid who ends up being a lawyer... I forget the actor's name, who secures, like, the information for Andrew. It's kind of weird when he's like, oh, so if I get you this information, you're going to be gone for a while. And I'm like, what degree does Andrew, like, bother you to make you feel this way? Like, is Andrew just bugging you all the time? Like, what's going on?
Do they all still live together?
Yeah, like, what is...
It's like another thing where it's like, this seems like it's trying to be a joke. But its presence in the movie suggests, like, a very strange relationship between everybody. When it's like, this could be a one-off joke of, like, then you're not around. Yeah. And next thing you see, he's in a crate shipped to Africa. And it's like, ha, 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 you know, that's like the joke version.
Yeah.
But instead, it is very weird because you're like, yeah, why are you, Lloyd, why are you so upset that there's this robot who's your mom's friend? And it's like, well, maybe he, you know, maybe Lloyd learned that his mom almost didn't marry their dad because she fell in love with the robot. You know, maybe that did come out in family therapy sessions.
Yeah.
It would be a Fableman situation where Andrew's playing, like, projecting a home video, and it's actually like the mom and Andrew, like, holding hands.
I kind of was, I was wondering if in that scene where Sam Neill's like, hey, did you record it? If you'd be like, this focus is really strong on Little Miss. What's going on here?
Little Miss. It's a new generation, or the Pepsi drink for a new generation. Little Miss.
And a new generation for our podcast, guys. We are now 200 in. Who knows what's in store for us after this? I mean, where do we go from here?
I don't know. Grats on the 200, y'all.
I mean, is there any other movie you could watch besides 300 for your 300th episode?
I was just going to say, I was like, clear 300
Rise of an Empire. I mean, I seem to remember there's a funny scene that I remember when Cody and I saw at theaters, we laughed that there's like Cody, you described it perfectly. The scene I'm talking about. I know, you know, the scene.
Are you talking about the fuck fight? Like,
when yes.
I remember being a defender of that movie when it came out. Like, everybody ripped on that, the second one. And I remember, I was like, this is cool.
Well, in 100 episodes, guys, we'll find out if 300 Rise of an Empire holds up.
There was a Cinescope 1962 movie called The 300 Spartans, too. There's a...
Which okay. I watched in high school. Yeah, it's the same story.
Oh.
So we got options, folks.
Maybe we can watch both.
We're all related around Spartans.
You'll never know what's coming.
Yep. Watch out.
But we do want to thank you for joining us here in our 200th episode and for listening for all... It's been... let me see here. 4 years since we started this whole venture.
Yeah, it's pretty good amount for that long.
It's not bad, yeah. Admittedly, I think we juiced a little bit with the CryptoCast, you know, those mini-sodes.
There's always a little bit of juice in if Dave's running a podcast, let's be honest.
If there's
don't mind my 800 episodes of RoboCop the Animated Series.
If you took those out, how many episodes are there?
If we took out RoboCop and Superman, we probably would have like 20 or 30 episodes to go before we hit 200.
Okay, never mind. It's fine. This is cool.
And what if you take out the Next Generation episodes?
It's 100.
What are you doing? Probably like a 50. I don't know.
We have 50 episodes.
This show's actually only covered movies 50 times. The rest is just random. Well, what would be random TV series?
What did you think if at 100, if at 300, when can we look forward to that? How many years is that? Maybe if
I guess two,
just
right?
2 years or so. Okay.
Well, yeah. That's only if we keep the rate of episode a week, including mini casts.
Okay. Cartoons.
Well, if you did one episode a week, that would be more than 2 years to get to three.
Right now, oh, we can't see it, but inside, like if we go flip and see it from Nick's perspective, you see like a bunch of like he's like the formulas are coming together, like the chess move in Bicentennial Man.
I'm thinking, yeah, because the rate that Dave pumps these episodes out, I don't know. I think we might.
Yeah, maybe 300 will like come back around and it'll be back and people will like, this was actually high art, you know, kind of thing. And it'll be.
I'm already saying that. Right? Yeah. What are we talking about? Come back around.
Well, I'd like to thank you guys for joining me here. It was kind of fun getting the original three back, me, Ryan, and Cody. And then obviously there's always been the omnipresence of Nick and Morton Hoof in the background.
Lording over all of us.
Much like Chad, yes. who I've now successfully booted back up. We've gotten rid of that Android. Chad is back in. It's back to normal here. Status quo is
and
been
restored. Dave has not learned a lesson, and he's treating Chad like a slave again. Oh, here we go.
Did you learn anything from Bicentennial Man?
That was one thing we didn't mention, that the opening thing with him was like, okay, so you're just going to sit down here in the basement and let me turn the light off. It's so wild.
Yeah, I thought maybe there would be like a time where it kind of cuts back to that and it's like this crazy laboratory or something.
Well, that was where his workshop was.
Yeah, I guess. So he kept it kind of old school down there in his Wayne Manor basement. Yeah. Anyway.
Real Castle Freak action. We honestly could go on another hour. There's so many things to pull apart in this movie. So we should we should just get out of here.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for joining us. It was a pleasure bringing you 200 episodes, and I can't wait to bring you 200 more. But that'll do it.
Which will be the 400 blows, right? That's the 400 episodes.
There you go.
Finally, classes join up.
And then 500 days of summer.
Yeah. And,
it's going to get really difficult finding movies that where 600 is in the title, 700, 800. It's going to be tough.
Let me see. Movies
assuming we live that long.
With 600 in the title.
Documentary, The 600, The Soldier Story from 2019.
Perfect. By the time we get to that movie, we'll all be in our little like hospital beds, you know, with like androids walking around us.
Galatea, unplug me.
You know, one day there will be a last episode you record before you die.
Jesus. Wow.
Oh my God. Well,
bringing it back to Bicentennial Man, and hey,
shake in the dark.
And that's right, and well, that's what makes us human.
Well, Nick, I'm going to need more than a 2-hour runtime to just wrestle with that question. I'm going to need at least a whole series. So, if you'll excuse me, I got to go ponder that life.
It could happen. This could be it.
Oh, I really hope Bicentennial Man's not the last episode we record before I die.
I'm just glad that you spent the time talking about Bicentennial Man. Last movie ever watched.
What are you doing? Are you trying to kill the podcast entirely?
No. He's on his bed and he's telling Chad, pull my plug.
You know, some sort of like pterodactyls or something come to the window.
Ryan, that was just a joke that Cody made about pulling the plug. I don't want you to kill me on this episode.
I'm not. I'm like any freak accident. You know, some terror people could come in here any minute.
Yeah, that's not suspicious at all.
I'm pulling the plug on this episode, folks.
Okay.
See you later. Happy 200.
Bye.
What a piece of fecal matter.